Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Ahsoka, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Moore, and I'm joined, as always, by your and my Star Wars pals and my co-host, Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
There was a long pause in your eyes of like, which person do I start with who's going to be less annoying? You chose poorly. Good morning or good afternoon. Good evening, everyone. Strong start.
Smooth. Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Dan. Hi, Kat. Hello, nerds. Thanks for tuning in to hear us talk about Star Wars, specifically Ahsoka Season 1, Episode 5.
Boop-a-doo. Part 5, Shadow Warrior, which was a game I played in the 2000s.
What do you mean?
There was a video game called Shadow Warrior.
Was it Star Wars?
I didn't
know. It was somewhat problematic, I think, probably looking back. Even at the time, I think I thought it was problematic. I think it got remade recently.
What was it?
Yeah, it came from kind of the Duke Nukem style of 90s
Duke
offensiveness.
Nukem?
Okay, we're not going that deep.
Yeah, you're doing great if you don't know.
So. I don't remember. I loved Captain Planet, but I don't remember being
not
Captain Planet.
Enough, not that Duke Nukem.
There were two Duke Nukems?
Two Duke Nukems. Yeah. And technically, I think the other one is probably holds
video
a
game?
Greater. Yeah, I think video game Duke Nukem, who is not Star Wars related, technically probably has carved out a larger pop culture footprint. I would say that in terms of memory allocation, though, Kat, you're doing fine. So, yeah.
Now I'm looking
the
up
Wikipedia
Shadow
page.
Warrior.
For Duke Nukem goes to the video game Duke Nukem, but it does
the
say...
The disambiguation page?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So this kind of explains why I've always heard people referring to Duke Nukem, but they do it in the abstract without referring to Captain Planet. I'm like, that's weird. Like, I would pretend with Captain... Like, Duke Nukem wasn't the only villain on Captain Planet.
Mm. Anyways, welcome back to our Star Wars podcast.
Fascinating.
All right. Oh, yes. We're going to talk about Part 5, Shadow Warrior, an episode in which... A lot kind of happens.
Yes and no.
Yes and no.
It's interesting.
Those are questions.
Decisions were finally made.
Decisions were made.
No Ezra, though. No Sabine.
Let us discuss what happens. Hera shows up and finds Ahsoka and Sabine missing, but discovers Hu Yang looking forlornly out over the cliff.
With the Mandalorian helmet.
With the helmet. So mm-hmm. Good. Sabine didn't lose her helmet. That's important.
Well, no. I'm sure there's some symbolism of there of leaving the helmet behind, and like leaving part of her Mandalorian upbringing. I also had the theory that perhaps we know there are recorders on Mandalore helmets that perhaps that she had recorded the final destination of where they're going.
But she didn't have her helmet at the time. She lost it in the woods when she was fighting Shin.
That is also a possible observation that one can make.
A helmet is just a helmet. While they're trying to figure this out, Jason Syndulla basically can hear...
Go back though. There was a really.
Okay. I don't have to do this. You can do this.
No. I thought there was a really interesting line here with Hu Yang when he said they didn't stay together. They split up. But the way he said it, they always split up made it sound like
they never listened.
It wasn't just those two. It was just all the Jedi. The Jedi never listened to him, and they always suffer for it.
Poor David Tennant.
It was really good voice acting to get that across.
Hu Yang has some really great. It's from the C-3PO mold, but it is different. It is C-3PO who has lived around for 1,000 years. So there's that like constant annoyance and a grievance, but also just like an exhaustion.
He's not as fussy as
no,
C-3PO is.
Yeah, he's not as easily phased, but he is like, they never listen. Why? Who am I even talking to? They never listen.
I thought it was like a sadder thing. Like if only they had listened, like took it as if they had listened from the beginning and to me. All of this, like all of the Clone Wars and everything that came from it, would have never happened had they just listened to me. So I'm looking forward to Hu Yang in the Acolyte being a key member.
Yeah. Hello, it's me.
Let's see Hu Yang's blog from 40 years ago where he's like, Palpatine is going to be the Emperor. He's a Sith Lord. Pay attention to me.
he's got yarn and like conspiracy board. No, look at the hood. Look at the hood. It's the same hood. All right.
Thanks for tuning in, members. Like and subscribe.
interspersed with this is that, of course, at the end of the last week's episode, we saw Ahsoka wake up in what we know is the World Between Worlds, never mentioned on the episode, to encounter Anakin. And she ends up in a fight with Anakin, and the sound of the lightsaber seems to be permeating through the Force, perhaps even audibly, so that Jason can pick it up.
And it was cool, though, too. When you first do the cutback from the water to the cliffs, I even pointed out, Dan, like, I think they're still hearing the lightsaber music. And you're like, no, that's not true. And then, Jason and I had, Jason. We heard it. It was good, very good sound mixing. I enjoyed it.
And then it was unclear. Did Hera hear it also?
It seemed
eventually.
Like she did.
Okay. Yeah.
Or enough that she was willing to trust Jason.
Yeah. And so she sends all the X-Wing pilots out to go keep looking. We get our first and only name drop of Kanan Jarrus.
Right.
He actually gets mentioned as Jason's father and a Jedi. So much of this plot of the episode is basically spent with Hera and like the X-Wings flying over the ocean trying to find Ahsoka and not having a lot of luck. The meat
and there's
of the episode,
a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's kind of a weird ticking clock where it's like, we gotta find somebody or head back. We've already searched. It's like, and you know, Carson Teva's being kind of like, yeah, I know looking for bodies is important, but like, we gotta get back. Remember, this whole mission is illegal and you brought your kid. Yeah. And then a fleet shows up to reclaim them. Yeah,
Mon Mothma
like,
calls and is all like, Hera, you got to come back. Otherwise, they're going to be revoking your command and you need to bring Ahsoka to testify on your behalf. And Hera's like, I can't leave. So, but the meat of this episode takes place in the world between worlds where Ahsoka and Anakin first have an interchange about him finishing her training. They duel a bit after he gives her the options of live or die. Which is slightly inferior to cake or death. And then knocks her off the pathway and down into what appears to be a memory.
And to be fair, ever since Rebels, I've always wondered what happens when you fall off the pathway. So I was very glad to finally have that answered.
Yeah. Spiritually. It's, you know, you end up in a vision quest, but maybe not a great one.
Yeah, we open with an unknown battle, but an early battle in Ahsoka and Anakin's relationship, where there are basically lots of people dying.
And this is, you know, Ahsoka has very much been Rebels season 5. This is like flashbacks to not scenes, but imagery from the Clone Wars cartoons. And I will say things that in the animation are kind of heavy in terms of, you know, Clone Wars is full of all these scenes of the Clone Wars with battles between clones and robots and explosions and lots of laser blasts going every way that, you know, when they're in animation kind of feel toyetic and, you know, fake. And this is like, oh no, it's real. And also like the actor playing young Ahsoka looks quite young in a way where it's like, what age did we put a young Jedi in a war zone? And you know, the answer is like, I think she's like 13 or 14, you know, you get hand wavy about like how do different aliens age, but it is like,
but still
we
like
put we put a young child, a not adult in a war zone,
not only
and
in
put
a
them
war
in
zone, in charge
and,
of,
and in charge of Jedi. And in a way that like that show, which examines lots of other challenges of war and combat and warfare and things like that, never questions. Well, it questions many other things. This hammers home like, oh yeah, we sent a teenager into war, and that was
that was our
not,
best
not
plan.
Great.
Well, I think it's something you can do in anime, in live action, in a show that is meant for adults versus Clone Wars, which is meant for children. Like that is a hard kids aren't. I do not think putting myself in those shoes. That is a question necessary. Maybe that's an unfair statement to say, but I think it is because I think Avatar kind of gets at some of that stuff. The Last Airbender. But I do think
a lot
it
of
is,
anime, a lot of anime where teenagers are saving the world.
Yeah, but I think they do question like why. But it is it does. There's a lot in some of the I forget which shorts it were. It was where they were taking away the Jedi when they're young. And sort of like, why do they have to separate them? Why do they have to be so emotional? It's like, what does the Jedi ask of their Padawans? Because it is. It's
to me, it resonates mostly with like, I mean, Ender's Game basically is the kind of, you know, training children for war and to lead people into war.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of the similarity there.
Dan, you mentioned anime, and there's the kind of two flavors of
Shinji getting the robot.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's the main flavor, which is like, you get a giant robot, and that's awesome, and that's escapism, and you blast around in space. And then there's Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is like a direct response to that, where it's like, child soldiers are bad.
Yeah, post-traumatic stress, and
Yeah, like like having our robots run on only teenagers that it's destroying their brains is not great, even if we need them to save the world.
Yeah, so the actress who plays her is Ariana Greenblatt, who also played young Gamora in Infinity War, and I gather is also in Barbie, which I did not know.
Yeah. So lots of ink being burned this week on the internet, on blog posts, on the Incomparable Discord about whether you've watched Rebels or Clone Wars or not. Like, what the heck is going on in this episode?
Yeah.
And of course, the corollary, does that matter? Because, and you know, I it's probably worth the three of us chatting about it, because I don't think the three of us have chatted about it. Like, I think we kind of thought last week that it's like, oh, it's Anakin's Force ghost, right? And I feel less convinced of that now. Is it the spirit of Anakin? Is it something? Is it like Ahsoka's memory of Anakin? Does it matter is also a fair question, because, you know, I think with the Force, there's always going to be hand-wavy magic. And if you're not okay with that, then you're probably not okay with Star Wars.
Yes.
You know.
So it's a good question. I do think the philosophical, and this is, I think, some of Filoni's, again, where I think Filoni does best, is some of the mythos of Star Wars is taking a step back. Remember in the, so two things, right? So my trading card commentary from the first episode that everyone laughed at, fine, whatever, is all about the idea of Ahsoka going on a spirit journey between the world between worlds. I always want to call it the war between worlds, but it's not the world between worlds. And then two, in the original version of the final scene of Rebel Season 4, when we see Ahsoka, she is wearing a white cloak. Yeah. And Filoni very clearly said in interviews, he very much loves the Gandalf story, and this is supposed to represent, like, Ahsoka the White. Now, interestingly, when we saw Ahsoka at the when we got that cutscene again, and this, she's still Ahsoka the Gray, and this seems like Filoni actually wanted to tell the story of how she ends up as Ahsoka the White, because afterwards she's wearing that white cloth.
Yeah,
she also seems different. She seems a little trippier and funnier and lighthearted, but she definitely seems like she had a near-death experience. She's come back.
Near death takes that edge off.
Yeah,
I did
really
enjoy the commentary I read that referred to her as Pajama Ahsoka. She's wearing cozy pajamas now.
That's cool.
It's a little hippie, you know. She's on her way to chat with Pergils and do some yoga.
Yeah,
and you know, and maybe save the galaxy.
Travel through hyperspace. So I think with those things
in
mind,
between smoothies,
lots of kale, which makes me think though that she. That whatever Anakin wasn't just a projection of her, but something that the world between worlds.
And maybe, you know, guess what? It's magic. It could be both, you know.
Yeah, true.
You know, I mean, I thought it was interesting because, you know, Ahsoka is a character that we have spent, if you've watched the animation, a lot of time with. Dave Filoni, you know, I think he invented the character, or at least used it heavily, and has spent a lot of time with. And it's also interesting that I feel like this examines stuff we've kind of times in Ahsoka's life we've already seen, but from two different angles. One, that like trauma of being like in war and in charge of leading people and the responsibility when she was clearly way too young to do that. And then also there's a little bit of this in Rebels, but like the guilt about Anakin. Abandoning Anakin and like, is Darth Vader her fault? Which clearly, I mean, I think the text of the show is like, she feels responsible for Darth Vader. And it's like, whoa, Ahsoka, is not on you.
There's no sort of, the way that is culminated in the chronology we've seen so far is she fights Vader in Rebels season 2. But that battle is not decided, because that is when she is removed from it at the moment at which it seems like she's going to lose. But since she never loses, because fight never finishes, it's left hanging out there.
Yeah.
But it is her full circle moment of coming to grips with and being able to talk to an Anakin of some variety about all the stuff she holds inside. There's a very astute bit, actually a listener, I'm just going to reference this now because it's one of the few letters we got this week. Isa, and several other people I saw this mentioned elsewhere online, points out that at the scene at the end of this fight where she has Anakin's lightsaber at his throat, her eyes are gold like a Sith's. Yeah. So like, this is also her, I don't want to say it's her flirtation with the dark side, because I don't think that's quite what it is, but it's a certain amount of taking that on herself, like I could do this thing that is, you know, I could solve this problem in some ways. Not that it's going to be solved because he's already dead by this point. But like, you know, there's a way out through it that involves embracing the dark side. Yeah. And that is an option that she is on the knife's edge there.
And, you know, I think this might be a challenging episode for a lot of viewers because there are so many things where it's like, what is going on, right? Like, what is this thing that Ahsoka's experiencing? I know some people were hung up on, like, why isn't she drowned if she's underwater? And it's like, whoa, if that's what you're stuck on, did you see the rest of the episode? She talks to space whales, dude. But, you know, I mean, I thought it was interesting even that they... It's not just the Clone War. They go to the fall of Mandalore, and even just the, like, you know, like, whatever the thing of the image of Anakin is like, I don't remember this. And it's like, oh, yeah, you weren't there. And it's like, who's in charge of this vision quest?
Yeah. I did appreciate, by the way, a production design point. The first flashback, Anakin is wearing his Clone War armor, which Hayden Christensen never wore. Like, that only existed in animation, but they mocked up a real thing. Also, most importantly, appearance from Captain Rex, which was definitely my highlight.
I do like the de-aging of Hayden Christensen. Actually, that was really good in the flashback. I thought they did a really good job at it, even better than Obi-Wan. And I do also, it was really fun to see Hayden Christensen play this Anakin. Because, I mean, he's much older now, much experienced, I think a much better actor. And I kind of wish he had played that Anakin that he just played in this episode.
The Matt Lanter Anakin, basically.
It was much more the snips, the
somewhat flippant.
Flippant, but very confident without being essentially a whiny 17-year-old. He was just too young, I think. But when he,
and the writing the child actor playing Ahsoka, I thought was really great.
She was
really
got excellent.
The, and especially, it's like, they're playing the animation version of Ahsoka, which is the version of Ahsoka we have the most of, but like really has the kind of poses of that character.
Yes.
That character has several like very specific ways they kind of like
the crossed
use
arms,
their arms
and
express stuff like, and I thought they nailed all of that.
I agree.
I guess in ways where it's like, if they hadn't, I don't know if I would have noticed, but I noticed that it was there.
Well,
so
they
that
also
was,
mirrored each other a couple times too, which was great. Yeah. But yeah, when they first cut to Ahsoka in the shadows and I saw her silhouette, I was like, man, I realize her silhouette looks a lot like young Ahsoka, and then when she came out of the shadows, like, oh man, it is young Ahsoka. Really well done.
Yeah, I thought also the change in tone slash posture of her going from that first battle where she is unsure to the one at Mandalore where, you know, if you have watched that sequence, which we saw in Clone Wars Season 7, she is like in utter badass mode, right? At that point, like, and she is at that point in her evolution has learned the lesson that she's arguing with Anakin about in the first flashback about being a soldier and like about living and dying. Like, she has kind of, if not embraced that, at least like accepted that and like, okay, this is my role in this war right now is being this person.
And I like the, I mean, I think that doing the visuals of dream sequences is always hard in live action. And a lot of times I feel like it feels kind of hokey. I thought this, where there's kind of just this like
fog.
Weird smoke
in
the distance. And like, guess what? In some ways that's like,
it helps
probably
the volume,
a budget thing. But like, I thought it really worked. And especially for the images of battle and just the things where the like, even if it's like, it could literally be like the same two clone actors, like running past her in circles, but just her there and like people running out of the fog and running past her. Yeah. I thought was real. So even if that was all just about saving money, the way it was executed,
literal,
I thought was really effective.
Fog of war.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's literally what it said. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, I also thought they used that to good effect in terms of having a vanishing point, sort of, in terms of like having the scene where Anakin walks off and flickers into Vader.
That was
great. That is,
that was excellent.
A real, real affecting.
You know, I would say, I mean, this is the episode we'd kind of been, I think, counting down to in terms of written and directed by Dave Filoni. And I think this may be even kind of the strongest one in terms of like, there's places where the writing is okay, but the visuals are kind of amazing. I do kind of worry, you know, Dave Filoni's background as an animator, and he's a very visual storyteller. I almost wonder if it's like, I have these like 15 images I want to show in this, like in these 30 minutes. How do I draw a line to make those happen? Because I think there are so many things that look amazing visually. They play the trick where it's Anakin and then it's Vader multiple times.
Yeah.
It's still effective each time they do it. There's stuff later where they have the Pergil. Why do the Pergil fly past the the fleet is there so that the Purrgil, to establish how big the Purrgil are, right? It is nonsense that there's a fleet sent to recover Ahsoka and Hera and three X-Wings, but it's like, it's so that we can have the giant space whales fly past them and for you to get how big the space whales are. So there's a bunch of things in this that feel like we had the visual, and you know, the visuals are really good. Yeah. It is, I think, unfortunate that sometimes the writing is not as good as the visuals, but yeah. You know,
and the character development, I think, is it's okay, it's fine, it's good. I still wish we were doing more.
Yeah,
with this, I think it was a better episode because I think it was good with Ahsoka. Like, even if it wasn't explicit, there's a lot to chew on of like to work on. What does it mean for Ahsoka? I'm also like pacing. We're episode 5. We have 3 episodes left.
I know.
I.
Surprised we haven't seen Thrawn. I would have thought we would have seen Thrawn by now.
This should have really... I hate to be the second guesser, but I feel like this should have come before the halfway mark in the season.
Yeah.
Because that's where you kind of want your pivot point.
I felt... It was tricky that we didn't get Sabine at all.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that's supposed to be hanging over us as like, we need to rescue Sabine. She's getting further and further from us with each minute. And it feels like more, it's like, Hera might get in trouble and have to do paperwork. Is like you have your choice of like disciplinary action or life and death, and they chose to like use Hera's career as the thing that's hanging in the balance.
It's hard though, because as soon as they get to Thrawn, though, they've got to explain what happened to Ezra, and like we've talked before, there's just some weird plot things that do not make sense.
It's gonna be interesting to see how that works.
What are the chances? You maybe know, Ezra's dead.
I think it's
seems
not
unlikely. Zero. I'll say zero.
You think it's zero?
I don't think it's zero. I think it's low.
Well, I think it's like small. 5%. I think 5% they get out there and they're like, yeah, Ezra's dead.
All right. I'll bid $1.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah. You know, it was a little disappointing too in terms of, you know, I think people keep complaining about like they want action, and not shows don't have to be action. But like they do spend a decent amount of time in this episode basically like showing us Hera waiting around, and that's not very exciting, right? Yeah. You almost wish, like, I mean, not to rewrite Star Wars episodes, but it's like, could she have been having some like really in-depth conversations with Jason Syndulla or
yes,
something,
exactly,
right?
You know, I agree with you.
I struggle to figure out whether this show has too much or not enough, and I think the answer is both. Like, yeah. It struggles a little bit in like it has too many characters that it doesn't do enough with. Like, yeah. I would like to see more from Hera. Like, if you're going to have her in the series, there should be a reason for it. And it shouldn't just be this weird thing where she's like fighting for her job.
And especially so. I was, you know, they have the whole scene where they go up, and I think I derailed your recap, Dan, but, you know, they go up and they're talking to space whales, as you do, and Ahsoka goes with her ship into the space whale to go, and Hera doesn't. And I felt like there, in my brain, I was like, you know, are they going? Is everybody going?
There's
two ships. What's going on?
I thought Hera was going with them, too. It was like, it's a huge space whale. Couldn't they just, all the space whales are going, couldn't Hera go in another space whale? I guess the issue is you wouldn't want to bring Jason because it may very well be a one-way trip. It may be a one-way trip. I would not bring it as a one-way trip. Like, that to me is the argument. They do. They do.
But like, intergalactic.
I mean, they even have it in a joke. He's too young to go between galaxies. But like, you know, Carson Teva could take Jason home. But like, I'm just, you know, carpool. You know, it felt weird that Hera is such a major character in this episode, and this was like, and she's not part of the next part of the story.
Right.
Or
her job was to find Ahsoka so Ahsoka can go and have adventure.
And I feel like there are other questions like, is this the first time that Jason has shown any foreign sensitivity? Does he do this stuff all the time? How does Hera feel about Jason reminding her about her late partner?
It doesn't quite want to tread on that.
Yeah, there's so many emotional stories. I feel like they could. And you don't even have to do it in thick brush strokes, right? You could do it in very light, faint brush strokes for folks to fill in, and it just doesn't commit.
I think I was really waiting for Jason to ask like a difficult question, because this seemed like the scenario in which a child would have questions about what the heck is going on. Why are there lightsaber noises coming from the ocean? You know, is that lady that's been drowning okay?
Well, he clearly knows Ahsoka because they like hug when she comes out, which makes me wonder if, you know, and she seems to realize when he's the one who finds her that like she's like, oh, that makes sense, you know. And I think it tells me in my head that there was some maybe not training relationship there, but at least like you know, realizing, like, keeping
more
an
than
eye
coworker.
On him. Yeah.
I mean, there is that question of, like, why isn't, I mean, I guess the answer is because there's not a Jedi Academy right now.
Well, and Ahsoka's specifically not training anybody, right? She refused to train Grogu, too.
You know, like, shouldn't Jason and Grogu be hanging out with Luke? And I mean, I guess Grogu did his sabbatical and he's done. He's eating frogs and living the life. Yeah.
So. He had a choice. He chose chainmail. Yeah.
You can only do one. No one can do both, except maybe Sabine.
A
lot of questions.
Surely there's no one who's both a Mandalor and a Jedi. You know, she's just
Ahsoka wouldn't know them anyways.
Yeah.
Ahsoka would not have already had a Mandalor who was a Jedi by the time that she mentioned anyways. Mm-hmm. There are some challenges.
Yeah, do you think Ahsoka mentions Din Djarin to me? Like, you know, hey, I met this guy. He's from the Child of the Watch. And, like, his life story is interesting. You should hear about this. No, that doesn't.
Also, I hear they're going to try to retake Mandalore. But you aren't interested in that.
Right, you know, you got a cat to feed.
Wolf cat. Yeah, I agree that they... I think, to your point, is I think they're carrying a lot of baggage from the previous seasons of Rebels, which is not a bad thing. It provides a lot of depth, but they then, I think they're almost, it's like a deep well. They're so afraid they have to commit to the entire thing that they're afraid to even go a little bit of the way.
It's like, it's a little bit touching the third rail, as it were. Like, they're like, oh, if we get in that, then people will be mad because they'll feel like they have to watch four seasons of a cartoon. It's like, well, pick a side.
Pick a side. I mean, especially it's weird here where it's like, you did trippy Vision Quest stuff, but are afraid to basically acknowledge that there's, like, you did stuff that's like, let's talk about the trauma this character has experienced.
Yeah.
But also like, but let's not get hung up on the details.
I'm surprised in some ways when they mentioned Kanan, because I felt like there were opportunities earlier on where it could have come
less
up.
Awkward to
and it would be weird if he, like, are we going to do the Duchess Satine thing and just be like,
well,
not getting into it.
I assume Captain Teva, is that right?
Tiva.
Would have, he knows General Hera. I'm sure he's asked before, like, so I guess maybe probably a lot of people died in the rebellion and it's probably impolite to ask, but I feel like that probably would have come up before. I don't know.
He references her as Phoenix Leader at one point, which is her call sign during Rebels, which suggests that their relationship goes back some ways, but it's unclear.
Yeah.
There is, I mean, I guess there is the little bit thing where, Kanan's relationship with the rebellion was really through Hera.
Yeah.
So there may be the thing where, like, people don't really, and, you know, and he died. So there may be, like, a lot of people never knew Kanan, right? And so there may be that weird thing where, you know, because it didn't really feel like, Kanan didn't seem like the kind of guy who was making friends with the rebellion.
Oh, or specifically early in the episodes when they join, he is really not happy with it at all.
No,
he doesn't,
like,
want to be a soldier again.
No, you know, he's like, he's got some.
He was probably also a child soldier.
We know he was. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, Hera had her own version of that. But I mean, he's not eager to sign up. He's just riding in the space. He's riding in the van with her, basically. But
Yeah, so, you know, now that we played through that whole thing, I mean, it seems as though, Ahsoka comes to her catharsis moment or whatever.
I think it's the whole thing. Tony, I think you said a good article about a thought piece someone had done, which essentially is it's her journey to decide that she, I mean, but the question that Anakin gives her at the top, like, do you want to live or die? And she ultimately decides that she wants to live. She gets pushed hard enough, she has that spark again. And I think we did comment earlier that the first few episodes, she seemed a bit stilted and very... what's a good word?
She's a little Spock-like in some ways. Like,
I feel like she's frozen. She doesn't know what she wants to do, right?
Yeah.
You know? And that's like, you know, whether she's dealing with depression or something. I feel like, Huyang and Hera are kind of like, do something, right? Like,
go connect with Sabine. Padawan again.
Do something, because what you're doing right now, get a dog. What you're doing right now is not working. Yeah. Well, presumably, if there's wolves, they have a domestic net.
I did appreciate, at least it did feel. I agree that, like, Rosario Dawson was allowed to, like,
smile and lighten up
in that last scene, and I enjoyed that more because it seemed closer to the Ahsoka that I like.
And, you know, we've labeled it as the Gandalf thing. I just like that it's like, there's a cheery change of clothes for you now, right? I will say also that the one shot of her where she doesn't have the headband thing on is weird.
Disconcerting. I agree.
It's like, we've never seen the part, we've never seen Ahsoka without some kind of, the headband styles change over the years, but there's always been something there.
I think in part because, like, from an animation design standpoint, they're like, Anseling, you need something.
What does that seam on a human, there. On an alien look yeah. like? And it's like, let's put something there.
No hair.
So it raises questions about ears. It's, you know, it's a whole thing.
Does she? I assume. Well, the Twi'lek they sense from their.
She's not a Twi'lek.
I know. She's not a Twi'lek, guys.
But she has.
Please, I know she's not a Twi'lek. She's that other thing.
To Gruda.
But please, but Twi'lek have ears, don't they?
Yes. Yeah. Bib Fortuna has ears, right?
We're Googling. This is like the thing when somebody asks, does so-and-so have a mustache? And I'm like, you know, all right. Some Twi'leks definitely.
Why do male Twi'leks have ears but females don't is the first hit.
I was going to say, the first image I got of different Twi'leks. Bib Fortuna, I feel like, has a very monstery design.
Some weird thing
that
between,
other
like,
Twi'leks don't
Twi'leks
follow.
Male versus female has been super weird from the very beginning. Like,
well, and I think they've pared it down a little bit. Where Bib Fortuna was like a monster,
and we had like a male Twi'lek dancer in Boba Fett, right? I'm not making that up. I'm pretty sure there was.
I don't remember when they go to the cantina, bar
that ends up not being a big deal in the entire show.
Bib Fortuna does have ear like things, whereas other Twi'leks have like full on like giant like things that stick out of the side of their head. So I would say they very much have ears. But yeah,
weird. Yeah, there is a surprising amount. If you just Google image search Twi'lek ears, there is some serious conspiracy board things with like.
Can you Google the who are the Twi'leks in Boba Fett?
I'm not what Twi'lek.
This is our best podcast material. Is
Dan Google stuff about Star Wars stuff?
Well, there is. I mean, Hera has the classic kind of aviator style thing she's wearing, where she has goggles, which she occasionally does put on, but also has these things that, I mean, I guess to me they always look like kind of like headphones. Maybe they're ear protection, but it's kind of weird because it's like, if anything, I feel like that would super muffle your hearing, but maybe it's enhancing it. I don't know.
Yes, there are dancers, male dancers in Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. Glad we solved that problem.
Yeah, important work done.
Unclear though if they have ears or not. We will. I'll figure them out.
Do
later.
Twi'leks have ears? Right in. No, we
don't. We don't. Yeah. How did we get here?
You asked this question.
I know that. There's a reason.
There, we were talking about Ahsoka's.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ahsoka's lack of ears. Yes.
Yes. Does she not have ears?
She does not have what humans. Sorry. I mean, humans have things that stick out of the side of their heads. Just
establish call them ears.
Baseline. We call those ears. Many other creatures in our real, actual world.
Yeah, this is exactly
don't
what I was
going
to go with the Twi'lek. But they have,
like,
have the,
well, I think of like birds and lizards have just like a little, you know, thing. But it seems like Ahsoka's species does not have either of those because they're sensing something through their.
Yeah, because I assume that's where I was going with the Twi'lek. I assume they're similar. They're what are called their. Oh, they're like, they had a name. I think they call them like Leku.
Leku, yeah.
Yeah.
I was always. Is that a real word or a Star Wars word?
I think it's a Star Wars word.
Okay, good.
They refer to. there's a term for Ahsoka's as well. I think they're called mandrels.
I believe that's correct.
But mantrels, sorry, with a T. But that is also Star Wars words. Let's be clear. All right. So where I was going to say was at some point we had a plot points here. So we also see when Ahsoka comes out and tries to reconstruct what happened that they do confirm she does have like the psychometry.
Yeah.
I want to say feet. Sorry, Tony. Too much D&D.
Yeah. No.
She put points in psychometry. And she can read the memories of the orb and figure out that.
I was like, you have that too? I was like, are they just establishing that Ahsoka has all of the cool force powers that other people have because she also talks to animals?
I was kind of annoyed by that.
I feel like you should only be able to deploy one secret force power per episode. That's just my feeling.
My rationale of that is that she's not as good at it as Ezra was. Like, Ezra's able to have a full-on conversation. She's more like, she gave them like Can you take me to a Taco Bell? What Taco Bell? Any Taco Bell. Versus we're Ezra's like, Dunkin' we want to go here. Yeah. I don't know why I thought Taco Bell.
No, I think, I mean, you know, fundamentally, the Force is in all living things and connects it, and Jedi know how to tap into that.
Yeah,
so
thanks,
it makes
Dan.
Sense.
Yeah.
Right, but I'm saying it makes sense that they may all be able to talk to them, but it's just varying degrees of how good are they at it. I agree.
Yeah, but I was kind of, because that was like Ezra's thing, and like everyone gets one cool thing, and then she's starting to pick up.
I mean, especially because it felt like, you know, and this is, I feel like, kind of a thing they've introduced with recent Star Wars is, you know, I think of that episode of The Mandalorian where Grogu heals the Mandalorian. Ooh, and yeah. I think that was the first time we saw force healing.
That was very
probably
cool.
Outside of like in video games where they invented it because they needed a video game mechanic.
Well, we see it later in Rise of Skywalker, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
Ben does? No,
yes.
Kylo does.
Yes.
Same person.
Save Rey. Yeah.
And there's force projection recently created. And, you know, some of that is fun and interesting. Some of it feels a little bit like we want to do a new thing.
We need a thing to fix this plot problem. And it felt like in this case, there were other ways to solve some of those problems, but they were not
pursuing them. So many things in the, like, this episode are mystical and unexplained. I feel like they could have just like, we're going with the whales, and Hera would be like, good luck. You know,
that's the end of the show because they jump into a black hole.
The reading the kind of memory of the map, I guess, felt kind of like, I mean, I guess it felt more like we run ourselves into a corner here where everybody left and we have to figure out how they know where they went.
There were other ways of doing that, it felt like, too, which is the annoying
part. I thought it was super obvious, though. They didn't have to guess at all about where, okay.
Everybody's
gone. Yeah, everyone's gone. You literally saw them jump with a hyperspace ring that you knew they were building to go get Ezra. They were trying to get the coordinates. You saw that. And now you're surprised, like, well, I wonder where they went. Of course, it's like, no, they clearly jumped. So,
last episode, guys, were you not watching? We watched.
Where you literally people died in their X-Wings. I think the bigger issue I have is, like, if you can just talk to a Purgon and say, take me with you, they could have grabbed any Jedi and done this years ago. Why is Ahsoka thinking of this now?
Well, yeah,
the Jedi's are a commodity.
Coming out of her trauma, maybe? I don't know.
I think it's the commodification of Jedi powers.
Okay. That's an interesting thesis that you're writing.
It is the very tricky thing of Ezra has been missing for years, and we need, like, it needs to be difficult enough to find him that we didn't do it, like, 6 months after he vanished.
Yeah.
But that is, I feel like, narratively, that's hard to, like, but also we need to solve the problem in the 5 hours of the TV show. And it's like, couldn't we have done those five? Like, what are the inciting events that make it so that we couldn't have done it for now? And
right. Because especially
one of them is like, the MacGuffin was missing. Until,
the narrative thing for part of it is that Ahsoka is missing, first of all, in Rebels, right? Because she goes.
Yeah. We still haven't explained where she is for all of the
original trilogy. Yes. Right. And so there literally isn't anybody. But, like, I think that's what's weird is, like, Ahsoka shows up at the end of the Rebels coda, and you're led to believe, like, she's finally cleared.
She's back.
You know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's back from whatever she was doing. She has gone through her, you know, Ahsoka the White transformation, and now they're going to go find Ezra, because here she is, and she can do it. Mm-hmm. And then what makes it tricky is this whole backstory we've built in about taking Sabine as her Padawan, which feels kind of weirdly bolted on, because it's like, well, when did that happen, and why did she come back? Why did she make that decision? Like there's so many questions there that I think this show does not seem to be terribly interested in answering. And I find that a little puzzling when there's so much meat on the bones here to add this entire dimension to it. That is, like, if you're not going to address it, why did you add this?
Yeah, it feels like they need to create a strong connection between Sabine and Ahsoka.
Because they didn't really have one.
Yeah, but I feel like they could have, again, I don't think they need to be. Now they're
per Rebels, they didn't.
Yeah, but they don't need to necessarily, because they're not really leveraging it, I don't know.
So checking in, we're 5/8 of the way through this show. We're past the halfway point. We're clearly past what was supposed to be one of the big episodes. There's only 3 episodes left, which could be, you know, that means there's probably like
two episodes of a trial back in Coruscant for Hera.
Court cases. You know, so maybe there's like two hours and a bit of Star Wars left, you know, since episodes seem to vary between 30 minutes and 55 minutes. How are we feeling about this series compared to other Star Wars series we've talked about?
I can comfortably put it in between Book of Boba Fett and Andor, which is like,
all right, good. We got spectrum. Those bookends.
Those are the ends of the spectrum.
I would put it above season two of The Mandalorian, and therefore above season three, but below season one of The Mandalorian.
I think I'd agree with that roughly.
I think that's about where I feel it too. So, you know, I just wanted to clarify because I feel like, you know, we're being critical, we're critiquing, but it's still. I mean, I think it's. This is not the train wreck.
It's Ahsoka, Boba right? Fett was. I would watch Ahsoka just sit in a room, just building pieces of the Death Star with what's his name, Cass.
I think what I struggle with a little bit is this is part of a story. We know Dave Filoni is doing a movie, and we know that movie is intended to wrap up a lot of the stuff that's happening in this era. So as a result, we know with three episodes left to go, the idea that the Thrawn story will be wrapped up in this is not happening.
No.
So we're spending three episodes getting, like, they're going to get to another galaxy. Do we have to spend two episodes being like, well, we got a whole nother galaxy. Now we need to find Thrawn in this galaxy. Has Thrawn already taken over that galaxy? Like, what is going on in this other galaxy? I have a lot of questions. Yeah.
It does make it seem like the movie is probably like Thrawn's the big bad of the movie.
Yes, 100%.
Right now. Okay, I guess I had not had that in my head before. I thought Thrawn was going to be a major player in this in this series. Instead, this series is about getting to Thrawn. And so I guess I feel like I've been bait and switched here a little bit.
You've been Thrawn for a loop.
Or Thrawn, they make it back without Thrawn. And Thrawn is like, just continues to be trotted out as the big bad who they just need to like, he just needs to be able to jump back to this guy. It's like, it is essentially like Voyager, but from the Alpha Quadrant.
Yes.
We know they're out there.
Terrible.
They just got to come back.
Yeah. Well, I will say, as someone who's been rewatching Voyager recently, there is a great episode. You know what? Yeah. No, it's a great episode. There's an episode of Voyager where basically, you know, spoilers for 25-year-old TV. The premise is that they figure out a way to make Voyager go really, really fast, and they have to have like a shuttle in front of Voyager in order to make it happen. And then there's a horrible accident, and the Voyager crashes into a planet, and everyone dies. And the two people who are on the shuttle, who it's like it's not Tom Paris, it's Ensign Kim and Chakotay, make it back to Earth and are like, yeah. They had written us off years ago, and they basically go on a two-person special mission to, like, we are going to rewrite time, and also we are fugitives now because they don't just let you rewrite time. That's pretty good. I don't know why I'm telling that story. I'll stop now. Podcasting. I will say, we received a variety of listener mail about...
Good cut. Save us, Tony.
See? About book recommendations, and I had a gap in my reading schedule. I went out, I bought Thrawn.
Or just Thrawn is all of your text to us.
All of my autocorrect text to Dan and Kat.
Why is Tony turning this into a bit?
So Timothy Zahn has written, I guess, like 9 books about Thrawn, 3 of which got thrown out and that Dan and Kat and I all read in junior high or high school or whenever, and then came back and wrote more. I read the first one. I thought it was pretty good. So if you want a, within the context of Star Wars books, it's no Caledonian Gambit.
Whoa.
Thrawn is, and I got a lot of Ender's Game feel from it. The book Thrawn is basically just his ascension from like, he gets picked up by the Imperials, he gets put in the Academy, and he works his way up through the ranks. And it's, you know, kind of this, you know, depiction of like, he is a master strategist and he's a brutal genius, but also nobody likes him in part because he's an alien and they're space racists, and in part because he's not from power and privilege, and that's a big thing in the Imperials, and you know, but he just kind of determinedly moves his way up. I thought that was pretty good. I started reading the second book, which is Thrawn Alliances, which has Thrawn and Darth Vader on the cover. And I will tell you the somewhat interesting parallel of this is the Thrawn Alliances is it is Vader and Thrawn get sent together on a special mission with flashbacks to Thrawn and Anakin Skywalker were on a weird special mission during the Clone Wars. I felt like I didn't super need an Anakin and Padme story, which is half of the book, but it is interesting.
I was going to ask if there's a romance in it.
Well, Padme is there. They're going to rescue Padme. And then
every single time.
She doesn't need rescuing. And, she can rescue herself.
Well, also, guess what? She rescues them later. Spoilers for tropes. They, you know, I enjoyed them, especially the way they depict Thrawn is a little bit different from the, Heir to the Empire book specifically, like the Thrawn is a point of view character.
And so we get, I was trying to figure out how much I would like that. Cause I kind of like him as a cryptic.
It is a very, because there's very much the thing of like, there's a lot of him like studying facial expressions. And the, it is one of those novels where there's kind of multiple point of view characters. Mm. There's Thrawn. I forget her name. She's the character in Rebels who's the governor of Lothal, who's scheming and evil.
Price.
Yes. So there's the story of her working her way up through the political machinations. And then I believe he's also a minor character in Rebels. There's Thrawn's assistant. Who is the like? Who basically is like random guy that gets assigned to be Thrawn's translator and like just wants to go work in a shipping depot and is like, oh, why am I with this weird alien? And then basically evolves from that to like, Thrawn is a genius that will save the Empire. Why? Why does no one around me like get that?
That's cool.
And I thought, yeah, but I mean, there is also like, there's some pretty interesting like depictions of like, I don't know, the grind of being an Imperial officer and like, we're chasing pirates today. We're chasing smugglers tomorrow. We got to write, we got to do paperwork on Wednesday, in a way that was like, I don't know. I mean, not everything is, you know, giant, spectacular space battles, but can still be interesting. So thank you to the many listeners who recommended it. I read that. I will finish reading the second one. I might read the third one. So yeah.
Nice. Speaking of listener mail. Speaking of listener mail, listener is this able to close the microphone?
Listener mail.
We actually don't have very much listener mail this
week. Thanks, Dan. Great podcasting.
But we do have
Have some.
I didn't say we didn't have none. I said we didn't have very much.
A select few.
Yeah. An elite cadre of
Mac Geek writes.
Do you make sure you don't have your spam filter on again or
We had some love for our Purgle and Squig shirt, which we will pimp again.
Yay. Which is on shop.
Nope.
HelloNerd.shop.
There we go.
HelloNerd.shop.
Nerds.
Nerds. HelloNerds.shop.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. We sold, quick business aside, a complicated kind of
business meeting.
I actually do have a gavel. I'll go get upstairs.
Chief Financial Officer, Kat Benish, I have a quick report. We've sold 12 shirts so far.
Okay.
I should note that 3 of those are shirts you bought, but thank you for your business.
That's fine. A sale is a sale.
Yeah. Yep. That is what we say. You're all right. Meeting adjourned.
Mac Geek wrote in and say, sorry I'm late throwing some thoughts your way, but loving the podcast as usual. Although, Tony, shoddy video game? How dare you? The Star Wars vector game with the cockpit cabin was the best thing ever. I think you just made a comment about shoddy video games in general.
Sorry, that was not directed a specific thing. It was just a shot across the bow at licensed video game products.
That's not you said when we stopped recording. You said that one was your least favorite by far.
I don't think I've played that one. If it's Vectrix, I just want to clarify, there are some incredibly amazing Star Wars games. There's also some Star Wars games that don't need to exist. They run the gamut.
One comment on the launch of the show. I think they gave away too much in the trailers and should have only released the first episode. The "did they just kill off Sabine in the first episode" conversation would have been fun. Looking forward to the Star Wars Christmas special episode of the podcast.
I've watched it once. I will likely never see it again anytime soon.
I finished reading, as long as we're talking about books, I finished reading the book. It's called Disturbance in the Force, comes out in November by Steve Kozak, about the making of the Star Wars holiday special. It is a fascinating read.
I know. You told me like every anecdote was delightful.
I did not tell you every anecdote. I told you like 3 things that happened in that book. It was like 250 pages.
Dan, are we gonna get sued for summarizing the whole book on a podcast?
It's about
once
the making
upon a time.
Of the
story. Okay.
It was very interesting. If you are interested in how such a thing came to pass, I recommend it. I believe there is a documentary coming out.
Is the short answer cocaine? Is that what
the longer answer is cocaine? No. Okay. It's actually, honestly, the funniest thing about it is like, and for those, I mean, speaking for the 3 of us, all of whom were born after that aired, originally.
When did it air?
78.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I think it meant before, but yeah, after. The prepositions get a little wonky sometimes.
The genre of show this was, the variety show, the holiday special, was an established genre. Like, that was just that era.
We
missed it.
We recorded it, right? This the issue.
This is part of it, right? Like, yes, so many of the cases it was ephemeral, but like, this was also the cutting edge age where people first had like Betamax recorders. So the fact that there are, and essentially almost all of the copies that you can find online basically get traced back to two copies because they have the commercials. And so you can tell which one, at least one of them has the commercials, but you know what station they were broadcast on. Mm-hmm. Essentially, one was from Baltimore and one's from New York.
That's wild.
So like the fact that we have this is all on.
These were not intended to be preserved.
There was also
It was never re-aired.
This was the Daily News that was printed, and then you were supposed to pack fish with it.
Yeah.
The variety show
they did for Lawrence of Arabia was also very similar.
I cannot tell if you're messing with
her. She is messing with it. She's got her messing with us face on.
Oh, okay.
T. Okay. Lawrence, great singing, dancing.
Seven pillars.
So, anyways, interesting book. I do recommend it when it comes out in a couple months. Lyle asked if this was Ally McBeal in space. I think also a reference to our shirt.
Yes, again,
sure.
We were joking earlier, and I welcome folks to write in on what is the Star Wars show you want that will never be made. Mine, I think, is like Lawyers in Space, but actually, I kind of got that with Krennic in ISB. Like, I would literally just watch, essentially, kind of like an office version of ISB, just all the skull, like the politics and the scheming.
I mean, Andor.
Fascist, yes. But make it wacky.
Yes.
Never change that.
Let's see. I don't think I had any mail this week. So, like, literal email.
Have you ever seen Death to Stalin, Tony?
No, the Death
yes.
of Stalin.
Death of Stalin.
Yes.
Yeah, right? It can work.
It
Not
can work.
Fascist, but, you know, it's funny.
So as a reminder, if you want to send a mail our way, got some thoughts about this episode or where the direction of the season is heading, you can email us at acp@theincomparable.com, or you can find us on Mastodon. We are at acp@zeppelin.flights. Please do send us your thoughts and
I think
comments.
Programming note is that our episode next week will be somewhat delayed.
Yes.
Dan Cat are on special
Star Wars assignment.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are going to Disney World, and
where they keep Star Wars,
all of
it. Though we have found out, Dan shared that Hera and Chopper and Ahsoka are only in Disneyland.
Oh,
so we've heard.
Lame.
Yeah,
hire somebody else, guys.
So because I'll be here next week, listeners, but Dan and Kat won't, and I won't be recording anything. So
8 o'clock
episode,
Wednesday.
Yeah, I'll be here.
Sit in the corner talking about Star Wars.
It'll be the episode, next week's episode will probably actually be a early next week's episode. It should be released before the next episode.
Yeah.
Next week's episode airs, I'm making a promise for Dan's editing speed here. So, you know.
That's enough is the
answer. Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of business on today's episode.
Do we want to talk about our thoughts for the member episode?
Yeah, we are doing a member episode, but we'll talk about that in
once we actually have some details.
Yeah. Well, also our member. I don't know how much member episode month has been mentioned yet.
Oh, spoilers! Spoilers.
There is going to be a member episode month, and you can look forward to that if you're an incomparable member. Lots
but
of great
content.
We
won't tell you what month.
It's next month.
It's next month.
It's November.
That's not
no. It's
next
October.
Month.
It's September right now. Okay. Well, people listen to podcasts at different times. It's confusing.
We will have some updates to share on that as we get closer to that date. But yes,
the basic
spooky.
Premise. I mean, I guess now we're locked into that.
I'm trying to get out so much.
We will do a special episode only available for members of The Incomparable. If you enjoy this podcast or other fine podcasts available via The Incomparable Network and you're not already a member, consider being a member and you get some stuff and you also get that warm feeling inside that you're sending a few dollars to people who have been making hundreds of hours of podcasts for fun. Yeah, I don't know. Do what you want to do, people.
Our child needs to eat.
Yes, Danica has things to eat. So
he's very hungry, actually, all the time. Hungry.
Yeah, we keep giving him swigs, and he's like, I need more. Yeah. All right, do we have any other last business before we wrap up here?
I thought, again, really good shots in this one. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I thought the direction was snappy. It's good. Yeah, no, I've got nothing more to say.
I'm just going to be annoyed if, like, Thrawn literally has one line of dialogue at the end of the series. But, yeah.
So you will... Okay, so, bear with me for 1 second. No, 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 no,
I'm bearing. I'm bearing.
So, I forget how this came up. Dan and I were talking about what is the most devious or, like, climactic tense. So, the climax is like, I have been expecting you. But I'm like, no, 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 no. It's, I will have been expecting you. I just find the pluperfect very funny. Is that the past pluperfect?
I don't think there is a past pluperfect.
It's been a long time since that. So, I was like, you go to, this is not going to be funny to anyone else but me. Like, many, many things. But it will be like, if Thrawn had one line, this is my question to both of you to wrap up. So if Thrawn had one line, what would be the least satisfying line that Thrawn would give you?
The least satisfying.
I've got mine.
Least all satisfying.
Right. Yeah.
Hello, up dog. Thrawn's become a real practical joker in that other universe.
He has just been driven mad by isolation. Yeah.
Tony, how about you?
Just something, if he does something overly hacky. I mean, I am interested to see how Thrawn presents himself, because he's usually so confident and in a place of authority, and he's always in charge of every situation with his kind of strategic genius. And it's like, you lost and have been missing for years. Like, I don't know how intimidating you can be.
Yeah, how are you going to come back and be a threat after all that? Everyone's that guy? That guy who got sent to another galaxy by space whales? Really? We're afraid of that guy?
I wonder if he's let himself go and has, wearing Hawaiian shirts or the equivalent of Hawaiian shirts and flip-flops.
Yeah, he's wearing sweatpants and,
eating beans out of a tin.
The new empire will work from home.
I have a new thing idea. I've invented athleisure uniforms. Yeah.
He's really into mindfulness now.
Ezra, have you tried kombucha?
There's a reason that he's not around when the New Order takes over. So,
he leaves. Yeah, because he's like,
he's doing
guys.
A health franchise. Ezra and Thrawn have teamed up together.
You know what? Could happen.
It's possible. Mm. Only thing to know, though, is to watch next week's episode and then talk about it a few days later.
Which is what we're going to do. So, as we wrap up, I would like to, of course, thank everyone out there for listening, especially our members of The Incomparable who support the show. We really appreciate it. And, of course, I would like to thank my co-hosts, Kat Benish. Thanks for being here to talk about Star Wars.
Always a delight. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Tony and Dan.
And Tony Sindelar. Always a pleasure.
Goodbye, nerds.
And once again, thank you everybody out there for listening. We will see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Purgles and squigs.
Attorneys at law.